And this is our basically our other standard report that we do for Public Funds Investment Act, is basically looking at our investments. We ended the quarter at $116 million. That's up $12 million from the last quarter due to the high amount of receipts that we get for the first quarter. Right now, this is how we have our money invested. Right now, we have about 50% of it in the money market, and right now, it's earning about 137 basis points, which is outbeating the 6 to 9 months, and that's pretty much how we have the breakout of that. And then the last is that the overall performance was 132 basis points, and that's beating out the Texas pool and the Treasury bills. Are there any questions? If not, I have Susan Anderson here, and she will be here to talk a little bit about the basically the 2018 long-range market outlook. The slide over there for that.
Okay. Good morning. Again, Susan Anderson with Valley View Consulting, your investment advisor under contract. Here to talk about the long-range market outlook. That's a little bit of a tongue-in-cheek. Our long range, any economist these days, is a few months, maybe a year into the future, what we expect. The market is changing quite a lot, as you've realized, and we are looking at continued economic improvement. We've been talking about the economic improvement since 2011, and it's been a long, drawn-out improvement. But I think you need to realize where we were at the end of 2008. We had a huge gap to fill up. And so this extension of a very long and protracted economic improvement is actually very good because it allows us to build a solid foundation as we move forward. So we think that we've been able to do that. We do forecast that we might see some cooling, and that's really because we're reaching full employment at this point in time. We don't have that many more people. You may hear otherwise, but we don't have that many more people that need to be employed. Now, what we do need to see is an improvement in the salaries of those employees. And we think now that we are approaching or have achieved full employment, that you will start seeing competition and folks having to pay higher wages. So that will also be good for the long-term forecast. We still have not reached the inflation target. We haven't seen a heat up at all in prices. And so that's really one of the items that the Fed is looking to address. Some of the new policies that have come into effect, things like pull back in some of the regulation that's out there, as well as talk about how this new tax policy might improve the incentives for employers and production and people to spend money. I think a lot of what we're seeing still is a consumer who has not been hugely motivated to buy things. Consumption is 70% of the economy, so that's really where we need to stimulate. I was very encouraged by retail sales that occurred during the holiday season, because that to me says people have been sitting on their cash. When the time comes right for them, they'll spend it, and that's really what the economy needs to start to hit those inflation targets. The Fed did raise funds rate three times last year. The Fed funds rate is the short-term rate that's very important to your portfolio because of the types of investments that you can invest in by state law. Those are very much influenced by the Fed funds rate. So every time the Fed funds rate ticks up, your interest rate ticks up. So that's good for your portfolio. The current range right now, and it's a range between 125 and 150. They just raised it in December. They also had a press conference with the chair, Janet Yellen, in place at that point, and she projected that they would like to raise it three more times in 2018. So again, that's good news for your portfolio. We did have a new Fed chair that's been nominated, Jerome Powell. The market was really anxious when they heard that Janet Yellen would be leaving and didn't really know what kind of a pathway the Fed would be pursuing with a new chairman in place. Jerome Powell seems to be cut from the same kind of cloth as Janet Yellen, so the probability that he will continue, and he has actually said that he intends to continue down the same pathway to keep this slow movement forward and keep the market safe. And again, the new tax bill passed. We're still trying to figure out what kind of impact that's going to have in the overall economy. We've had a lot of good things happen as a result from that. But reality is that a lot of this is corporate directed, and the hopes are that corporate will start hiring more, will start bringing jobs back to the U.S. The only other thing to consider there is it's not all about the tax code that brings jobs back to the U.S. A lot of it has to do with the price of labor. And quite frankly, the U.S. labor force is very highly paid. So whether or not the success comes from corporate transferring in of U.S. jobs still remains to be seen. So we'll talk about some of the recovery implications. The policy positions are still developing. We're still working out on the budget, some of the budget items that are in there. So it remains to be seen. Healthcare is still hanging out there, not knowing exactly what's going to happen. And all of those decisions that will be made will directly impact the growth of the economy. So we're, you know, hyper-focused on exactly what's happening in D.C. To see what happens with your portfolio overall. The Fed outlook, as I mentioned, was for continued improvement, but they did mention that it's not going to be fast, and they don't want it to be fast. They want it to be slow and measured and building of a good foundation. We're going to look at a few of the items that really impact the overall success of improvement. New home sales has recorded phenomenal growth. In just after November, when this group got together, and I take my information from the U.S. Census Bureau, they stopped for November in their projections. They do it again in February. Right after they met, we had a 17% surge month over month in November. That followed on about a 7% increase in October. So we've had a huge influx. One of the things that has been holding back has been the number of units that are available. The home builders have reacted and have moved the number of units for sale into the marketplace, which should help that. Existing home sales, on the other hand, it's been growing, but it has been constrained. It's only, as of right now, got about 3.2 months worth of supply. It really should have about 6 months to have enough supply to match the consumption desire out there. So as long as you have that kind of a pullback on sales, it's going to inhibit growth in existing home sales. But still, the rate and the pace of sales and consumers wanting to buy is really encouraging for the long-run results. Jobs have been phenomenal. Just since 2011, we've added 16 million jobs. Last year, we added 2 million. The year before that, 2.2. So what happened in 2008, I think everyone is fully aware, we had a huge loss of jobs over a number of years. We had a huge gap to fill. So you start out, and once the economy starts to run on all gears, we had a huge inflow of jobs month to month. It's starting to slow down a little bit because, again, we are reaching, we're already better than pre-recession levels in unemployment. We are at, this is a projection that they made back in November 2017, we are at a 4.1% actual unemployment rate, which is very good, and the Fed really considers that level, anything under about 4.5, to be full employment. And what happens in full employment is people start to change jobs. They feel more comfortable changing jobs. Employers have to add additional salary to those positions to encourage people to stay or people to take the jobs. So that is going to have a good impact in the long run over the employment situation and people's salaries. And remember, again, consumption is 70% of the economy. So encouraging people, having more and more income, having their home values go up, all of that means that they feel more secure spending money. GDP, that's the gross domestic product. That's a measure of how much is produced in the economy. It, over the last year, was about a 2.3% average GDP, which is just so-so. Towards the end of the year, however, we had 3.2% month over month growth. We got the early stages of 2017 fourth quarter, and when I say early stages, GDP comes in, they make two adjustments to the original assessment. So we've gotten the first number out, it was 2.6. I expect that that might be adjusted upward twice more, but coming on the back of a 3.2, having a 2.6, I am not concerned about that. I think it's still a very, very good number and bodes well for continuing growth. Inflation, as I mentioned, has been very, very moderate over time. The green bars are the ones that you really need to kind of look at. The blue bars are, and on that side, those are the actuals after projections. The blue bars measure everything in the basket that's available for sale, including food and energy, which are very volatile. So when they carve out the more volatile aspects of CPI, that's where you get the green bars, and that's much more stable. So we're looking at, as you can see, CPI has grown a bit. That's what we want to see. We just don't want it to get out of line and growing too fast. So again, we're good on a good pace with CPI and inflation. We just really want it to be a little bit higher than it is without overheating. So considerations, we're going to continue to watch the Fed policies, primarily healthcare and the implications that that has, along with the tax code. We're going to continue to watch the domestic job creation and earnings pressures that might come up as a result. Inflation prospects, rising interest rates, and the trade implications. When I say trade implications there, what I'm talking about is the foreign trade, because we do need to have exports and a healthy export market to continue to encourage production. The domestic housing market has been full speed ahead, just making sure that it doesn't overheat and we end up the same place we were back in 2008. And then the flattening yield curve is the one item that we're a little concerned about, and I'll show you what I mean here. The green bar was where we were last year, and you can see that rates are much lower than what they are, particularly on the short end. A healthy yield curve should be upward sloping all the way from overnight to 30 years. Should be pretty humped, you know, as far as you talk about the rates. What we're seeing, however, is even though short-term interest rates are higher, you're seeing a flattening out. And when you see a flattening out, that tells you that the market is just not so sure that the economy can continue to grow at the pace that it's growing. So that's our concern, is that if we see an inverted yield curve where rates are lower and diving, that's a concern for your portfolio. We don't see that, but we see flattening, so we'll continue to watch out for what's going on in the economy and react with your portfolio. So that's the end of the presentation. If any of you have any questions about your portfolio or the market, I'd be glad to address them. Yes?
Have the new withholding tables taken effect yet for weekly and biweekly? And
I don't know that question for sure, but I think they were supposed to take effect in the first quarter of this year. I just don't know the date.
Okay. So the wage earner people haven't seen any pay raise yet?
I don't believe they have. Yes?
On the investment side, you know, we we certainly know and want to watch our rate and economy. On our liability side, have we refinanced? Because I think we have been in such a low monetary policy for so long that we have really gotten used to these very low rates, and they're not ordinary. Have we refinanced or many of our issues have been passed through, so we don't influence it as much, but have we taken advantage of the low rates? And we don't want to miss that, in other words, because that can be a very big impact to our debt.
The question about have you refinanced, that's a financial advisor side, the people that help you issue your debt. We're the investment advisor. I can tell you though that you're right. Rates have been very low on the refinance side, and I've seen a lot of customers go through and take advantage of the low rate environment. The one thing you have to keep in mind though is as a public entity, you can only refinance once any set of bonds.
Okay.
So you got to be very discriminating about when you do that. And it depends on your issue.
Thank you. Yeah, and we may have missed opportunities. And I know we did do some of it earlier, so we can talk about that at another time if we need to.
Okay. So what are some of the external... So I hear there's short-term confidence in the economy, but not confidence in the longer look, and that comes from consumers or people reviewing the consumers or the economy. Mm-hmm. What is causing that longer-term outlook to be soft?
There's a number of things. I think you see the tax policies that are coming into play. I'm not so sure that a lot of people really understand and are worried about how does that, is that really going to help me?
If you own a small business, they know. They're ecstatic.
Right, right. Yeah. But then on the long term, from an economist's perspective, they're looking at this might create some deficits. And what happens if it creates deficits to the economy overall? Some of the items that are in the budget are cause for concern. Some of the deregulation might be cause for concern. So it's not just the consumer looking at this. It's also the economists and the market players that say, you know, I'm not sure I want to go out and buy a 20-year position because the market may move against that and put me in a bad situation.
Can you give me an example of the deregulation that people are looking at?
Well, the deregulation that comes up most often are two, EPA for one, and then the second one, the banking industry deregulation. And what does that mean? You know, a lot of the regulation came in because of what happened in 2008. They put that in place because they don't want it to happen again. But if you start stripping out some of that, again, you know, I think economists are concerned about what kind of implication that will have. Is that it? Okay, thanks.
So I'd like to back up a little bit. You know, I guess you have mental blocks every once in a while, but... You have mental blocks on these things, so sorry about that. But back in the budget, we booked a $2 million rate stabilization reserve. The reason being is up here in the revenue, interruptible water is not part of our revenue scheme because it's an estimate, and we don't really know the number until October. So that's a big chunk of numbers. So what we do to keep the rates low, going from 72 to 74, I booked basically a $2 million rate stabilization reserve, which is reflected in here. But as we go through the year, we'll see interrupted water coming in probably around $5 to $6 million, which is the offset to this. So when you do the financial statements, the rate stabilization reserve would show a loss in the budget for that perspective. Because basically I'm not showing the full revenue because it's not approved by the board until we get to October, and the budget's approved prior to that in July.
Oh, great, I appreciate you backing up and doing that. I was confused and I thought, well, we see our surplus going down and our working capital going down, and I'm thinking, well, is that the right thing to be doing? That's my point.
Right. And probably what I need to do, I can do in the next, is really show the rate stabilization reserve as part of this to show that there is a positive side of this too. But, and I should know that, but my focus was now, not, I should have backed up to July, but you know, hey, that's just, but I am using the rate stabilization reserve, which is what the board gave me to be able to use to keep the rates low and maintain, you know, keep customers happy from that on the rates going up each year. So apologize for missing that.
No, no apology needed. I just cared. Go.
Sure.
You mentioned interruptible water supply, and when I look out the window and see the effects of this drought, is it reasonable to assume that that interruptible water is going to be present with the current conditions, or is that something that we're going to see a continued shortfall as we go forward?
I may have to ask Brad to
I thought it might be outside of your bailiwick.
Yeah. I've got the expert right here.
There you go.
Yeah. I mean, at this point, if I was having to guess, I would think that there won't be impacts to interruptible water sales come October of this year. However, it's possible, you know, if we end up in another 2011 situation, that there could be some considerations there. But I wouldn't expect it at this point, given the reservoir status is still 91% full, and the climatic forecasts are really looking at a dry next couple of months. But once we get to springtime, it's kind of back to more normal conditions, and so you know we could be dealing with flooding again, you know, at any time. But it's possible, but unlikely.
So I guess my concern is, not unlike Leroy's, is it reasonable to dip into the reserves to cover this issue, or are we going to be looking at a shortfall come December?
I don't. You know, we've already issued contracts out for the water, and the invoice has been mailed out, and my expectations right now is that we'll come in close to what we were last year, in the neighborhood of about $6 million in interruptible water this year.
Okay, thank you.
One other comment on the interruptible water. We've got quite a bit of conservatism built into that calculation. If you recall, we actually go through a hydrologic calculation and then only take 25% of what that calculation shows. So it's conservative to start with, even if we are in dry conditions.
Thank you very much.
I think in the budget for this year coming up, I'll spend a little more time talking a little bit about what that rate stabilization reserve is and how why we put the number in there for you. I think that's helps explain a little more than I can remind you again when I show this slide for it.
Of course, my big question is our rate adequate to sustain ourselves? Are we charging enough for the water?
But the rate is based off the expenses that we have, and the revenue, the adjustment for rate stabilization is for the revenue itself. So we base the rate on the O&M expenses for the year. So when interrupted water comes in, it does supplement that deficit that we have for it. But the rates are set based off the O&M expenses. We put 100% of that in. Rate stabilization reserves only against the revenue.
Okay. Thanks.
There's a slide that we had maybe a couple of years ago that showed all of the pieces that go into to making our rate. You might find that slide. It has like these big, buckets.
Yep.
They have buckets. And it really does show where it all goes. And
right.
So it's illustrative
right.
of what may be easier for us to understand.
That, I agree with you. And probably I need in the budget for this coming up this year, when I go through it in April and then in July, mm-hmm. I'll spend a little more time talking a little bit about how I use that rate stabilization reserve. And the mm-hmm. real intent is to keep growing the rate, but not growing the rate at astronomical levels of 5 or 6%, but at 3%. And my hope is, as we go through with SysOp water and some of the other ones that are coming in, that will be at the rate that we want to keep at going forward. Then we kick in things like Allen's Creek and those expenses that come up that really will cause the rate to go up. I'm trying to avoid the hockey stick look at the rates out in the outer years, and so that's really what I'm trying to use the rate stabilization reserve for. Thank you. Okay.
At the end of this report.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Here it is. So that concludes that piece.